Okay, we appear to be rolling.
Appear to be.
Go ahead.
Appear to be.
Well, we are. We definitely are.
I just like to.
I know. I'm not all together here this morning. I'm very sick.
You know, we've had a long effing week.
Yeah, it sure has been.
I've been sick. Seattle's been snowed in.
I've been sick. I just got sick, and I've got to go be Santa for 5 hours. I have to drive an hour to go be Santa for 5 hours. And then drive an hour back, and I am not looking forward to it.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's been a long week, and I had a sore throat, so my voice is a little off. And there we are. So welcome to Mustard Mayonnaise. I am Matt.
And I am Richard.
And we gather on a mostly weekly basis and discuss things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest.
That's right.
We do this from the perspective of two guys who have seen The Big Lebowski.
150 times?
It's a large number.
Yeah. It's important to note, way before anybody else was like, oh, Big Lebowski's the thing to watch over and over again. We were like... totally into that before there was a recognition that there was a cult behind
it. Because now there's a bit of a cult behind it.
Which is cool.
You say that, but people say that, but nobody I know is aware of that.
Well, I don't know. Whenever I'll see this thing about cult movies, they invariably talk about the Lebowski Fest in Kentucky and in Louisville, and they'll go into all these... They'll go into details about that. So somehow there's some form of a cult out there.
I completely agree. I'm just saying that my wife has no idea. Yeah. Most of my friends have no idea.
Okay.
They know the movie. They just are unaware of the cult status anyway. So that's what we do.
Cool.
And we missed last week because it was Thanksgiving.
Yep.
And so we've got 2 weeks of things to talk about, and yet I have a short list.
Yeah. My brain hasn't been functioning much either lately.
All right, so we've seen some movies,
yeah.
Which is perhaps not as common as you would think for us.
Yeah, lately.
I saw The Fountain.
Oh, yeah, what did you think of The Fountain?
I thought it was good, and the problem was three movies came out in one weekend that I wanted to see.
Yeah.
The Fountain, Deja Vu, and Tenacious D.
Yeah.
And last weekend it was also snowing on Sunday, and it was difficult to get around. Not impossible, but difficult. And there was football on, and I was like, well, gosh, there's like four things I want to do. Watch football and see these three movies, and something's going to have to give.
Yep.
So I decided I would... I'm looking at the review sites, and The Fountain was about what I expected. People either loved it or hated it.
Yep.
And then Tenacious D was like a 46% on the tomato meter, and Deja Vu was maybe a 60%.
Yeah.
And I emailed you, and I'm like, this sucks. I don't know what to see. And I finally decided I would go see The Fountain.
Yep.
Because it was sort of non-traditional filmmaking. You know, the guy, Darren Aronofsky, the guy who did Pi, the guy who did Requiem for a Dream, is taking a chance with this movie and doing something a little different. And
spent a long time working on it, getting it produced, six
years. It famously was a very troubled production. They were almost ready to go with Brad Pitt and Kate Blanchett. Brad Pitt had grown a really scraggly beard because I remember he had to go to the Oscars or went to some important function looking scraggly. And they said, well, the reason he's looking scraggly is he's about to shoot this movie, The Fountain. And then 7 weeks before production, I think it was, Brad Pitt got cold feet, said this film is not where I think it needs to be right now. Mm-hmm. And he pulled out. Production stopped. They were building sets in Australia. It was nuts.
I wonder what the contracts were at that point, because
Blanchett had a pay for play.
I understand that, but I'm wondering about Brad Pitt. I mean, can you sue Brad Pitt for pulling out? I mean, it would seem to me that if I have to pay Kate Blanchett because Brad Pitt got gold feet, I'd be suing Brad Pitt. I wonder what the deal was.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know.
And, I mean, it had to have been tied to, he must have had a deal with like some production company that also had other deals where he said, listen, I'll do this other one. Don't mess me over on this one because I can't imagine not suing him for doing that.
And you're completely right. And I don't know what the, you know, insurance situation was. You know, and they also, a couple articles I've read recently, one in Wired, of all things,
yep.
talking about how the way they did the budget process was really ill-advised. because they sort of did it like, well, if we did, as they prepared the budget proposal, yeah, they chose every expensive option.
Yeah.
And sort of, and without saying, you know, we can do it for this other less expensive option, they just didn't present it that way. They presented it as, here's a very expensive thing, and that was part of the problem. Anyway, Darren Aronofsky decides to continue with the project and rewrites it so it's less expensive. There isn't this huge battle scene at the front, and pushes through and gets Hugh Jackman interested. His now, are they married yet? His girlfriend slash fiance slash wife, Rachel Weisz. Excuse me. And he remakes this and he gets it released. And I thought that is so, and despite all that, it was a non-traditional story.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I'll give it a shot. And I liked it. It's not a pat. It doesn't tell you everything you need to know. It doesn't lay out all the answers.
It's pretty clear. I was reading some reviewers that they didn't quote get it because they were describing completely different things. And also some of them, a couple of reviewers very much pointed out, said, you know, here's the thing about this movie. A lot of movies, they'll do this very earnest thing where they're going for this thing, but they'll pack it with a lot of dark humor to help you through the movie. And they said, this movie doesn't pack anything with dark humor. There's no dark humor in there. It is what it is. And if you're not used to that, it might be more challenging. And I thought, well, that was an interesting observation. The reviewer is trying to give it credit and trying to explain why some people, you know, when you go to these movies, you know, a lot of the filmmakers provide, you know, humor as a crutch, and this movie doesn't. I thought that was interesting.
You know, it's a film about, you know, love and dealing with loss and fighting against it and whatnot. And it's the three story arcs deal with that in different ways. And the ways they're related are quite interesting and intriguing. And it's just that at the end, it's, you know, it's a bit of a, oh, okay. And, you know, and some of the Jeffrey Wells for a while now has been saying it's a, you know, you need to go in stoned to really get it.
Honestly, I hate it when people say
so
that.
So do I. That's, I think, you know.
And I love Jeffrey Wells, but I hate that, man.
You know, I am such a square. I've never done drugs at all.
Yeah.
I've been around people smoking pot, so, you know, it's not like, oh, what's that? I just, for whatever reason, have chosen to never do that. And I have no interest in seeing a movie stoned. I don't care what the experience is like. I don't want to see The Wizard of Oz. I don't want to see The Wall stoned.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought it was a good movie. I can see why most of America would be baffled by it. That doesn't mean they shouldn't see it. Yeah. It's good to see something challenging.
So you're saying most of America should see this movie?
Yeah. Well, you know, that sounds pretentious and just I know what's best for you sort of thing. But, you know, it's, you know, you don't want to insult people's intelligence by saying, well, middle America is just not going to get it, because that's really ignorant to say that.
Yeah.
Just the same, it's not a traditional movie. It doesn't have big explosions, and it requires you to think in ways that most movies don't. All right. And then yesterday I saw Deja Vu.
Yeah, what did you think of that?
With Denzel. Most of the, you know, I'm watching it through most of the movie, and I'm watching
Tony Scott, frenetic.
Yeah, Tony Scott, who's done, he directed True Romance, he directed just this whole litany of films that by and large I enjoy. Enemy of the State.
Yeah, I did too.
Which I enjoyed at the time.
But every single one of them, you end up walking out of them going, God, if you just jumpy on his editing. That's my problem.
I really like True Romance. I haven't seen it in a while.
I like True Romance.
But I didn't think that. I didn't.
No, I'm talking about especially his more recent ones. They're just.
Well, he did Domino, right?
Yeah, he did Domino.
I didn't
and he
see
also
that,
did,
but that was.
He also did Man on Fire, which was a Denzel Washington thing.
I saw that with our friend Holly.
It's not with the editing. Actually, the problem I had with that was, they treated Dakota Fanning as literally, it was like a traditional movie where he falls in love with the person he's bodyguarding. And the dialogue was done exactly like that, except for the fact that she was like 10. And it was creepy when you sat down because they had her
I think of that as interesting. Now, if they had, you know, done anything beyond speaking, then to me, it becomes.
Well,
a lot creepier.
I agree. But they had Dakota Fanning acting as a preternaturally aware, basically a 30-year-old.
Uh-huh.
And I just found it weird and creepy, that dynamic, this relationship set up. It just was weird. But the movie wasn't horribly bad.
I didn't have that reaction to it at all. I didn't love the... Well, I liked the movie. I wasn't disappointed walking out of it. And it's interesting because when it came out, which was fairly... How far after 9/11 was it?
Oh, no, it's not that old. It's like, no, it's like 2 years old.
Got a very much... Punish the bad guy.
Actually, and, no, it's about 3 years old, because I remember seeing it the night my cat Spud got very, very sick, and so that was, yeah, it was about 3 years
ago. I remember Jeffrey Wells saying that what's interesting about the movie is that it's got a very clear black and white punish the bad guy. Here's a guy punishing bad guys, and no bones about it. He's shoving explosives up their butts. He's...
Well, I liked that too. It was like, it was kind of good. There's been a lot of movies where you have some guy like that and then they fall for the person they're not supposed to fall for. And in this case here, if you literally did not change a word of dialogue, just got rid of any reference her as a child, but didn't change a word of dialogue, their interactions, everything else, you would have considered it, even without seeing any of them doing the nasty, you would have considered it a romance. You would have considered it, it's sort of like those movies where there's the unrequited romance because they can't get together, but you know they really were together. That's what that movie was like. It was weird. It was, I don't know. Anyway, I didn't hate it. I just found it weird. And a lot of it has to do with Dakota Fanning, who's a really, I believe, a good actress, but she's sort of preternaturally aware and she can become very... act like an adult, and I find that creepy. Anyway, so let's talk about Deja Vu, though.
I find it odd I didn't have that reaction at all. It didn't dawn on me. Anyway, you're sitting through most of it, and I was like, okay. And then towards the end, suddenly you check out.
Yeah.
And I'm
too many curves?
Well, it's got this whole time, not really time travel, it's got this time travel aspect to it, which... you're kind of like, okay, and you're giving them rope and you're giving them rope. And then eventually you're just like, because time travel's hard. You have to set up the logic of the time travel in whatever context you're using it. Can you affect the past? Can you meet yourself? Can you do this? Can you do that?
Yeah.
And it's really, really, really hard to get it to work plausibly.
Yeah.
But that was only part of the problem. It just kind of, you didn't care at the end. Towards the end, I'm thinking, I should have seen Tenacious D. That's honestly, that was my reaction. And, Denzel is good. He's just doing his Denzel thing, not really doing anything new and innovative. Val Kilmer's in it, who I like, but you don't. Val Kilmer has
like his last movie.
He needs to lose some weight.
Yeah, he's...
He's hard to buy as a federal agent with that pudgy a face. Adam Goldberg was in it, and he's okay. He actually didn't overplay it. Usually that character is overplayed.
Mm.
Sort of the techie, funny, comic relief, science dork guy. And honestly, the score was horrible.
Really? Well, we're going to pause here.
Have to pause as your cinema film dorks will tell you. A good score is unobtrusive and you don't notice it. This score, because I noticed it, I would have to say by definition, was horrendous. Because I felt so manipulated, and here comes the sappy music upswing, and here's resolution music, and it was just blah.
It's funny. This morning I was fading in and out of consciousness because I'm ill, and I had this stupid movie U.S. Marshals on because it was 3 hours ago. It was the HBO rebroadcast, but I wasn't watching. I was just hearing it fading in and out, and all I could hear was the score during the action sequence. It was awful. It was so obtrusive, and it was so, I could almost tell what happened. He must jump here. He's hiding here. It was really terrible, but I bet you I never noticed it in the real movie. When I saw the real thing. So I don't know. Anyway, it was pretty bad.
U.S. Marshals, which is now on your projector as we're recording this.
Terrible movie.
And I remember because I loved The Fugitive.
Yeah,
and this is essentially the sequel to The Fugitive. And they told you, they got everybody except Harrison Ford and Cela Ward.
Stephen Hopkins, same writer.
Same director, Tommy Lee Jones, Joe Pantoliano, the other U.S. Marshals.
And then they also brought in Robert Downey Jr. and... Wesley Snipes.
And so, even in the advertising, it was pretty clear this was the sequel to The Fugitive.
Yep.
And yet, it failed It was such a horrendous movie.
Yeah, on every
level. Horrendous. A disaster. And, God, I watched it once, and, oh, I just, you check out early, and I don't know what it is, what vibe they got wrong, but yeah. They got right the first time. It's hard to put your finger on.
It's funny, if you listen to the commentary track, for The Fugitive, it was one of those early commentary tracks they did. And first off, it was pretty clear they did it while or about when they were doing U.S. Marshals. It's one of those ways where you can convince people to do a commentary because they're doing another one, so it's effectively part of the promotion. So it's one of those commentary tracks where they recorded the director, I think it's Stephen Hopkins, and they also got Tommy Lee Jones to do a commentary track. Yeah. And they did them separately, but they tried to edit them together like it's a conversation, which I hate more than anything. Because some guy will be talking, then they'll make a joke, and then they'll like cut a piece of like Tommy Lee Jones laughing like he's responding to it. I hate that so much. And you know, they hardly do that anymore, but at the time, I'm sure the commentary track editor thought, you know, I'm really good at this. I've done a beautiful job. I'm sure at the time they didn't realize that that's horrible and they should never do it. So they kind of probably took pride in it, and it was just terrible. But anyway, they were talking in anticipation, if I remember right, of this movie and how fun it's going to be and what they're trying to do. And it's sort of funny in retrospect.
Well, I give them credit for trying it because really not that many movies have, you know, have pretty much said we're doing a sequel, but we can't call it a sequel for, you know, I'm sure legal and rights reasons, but wink, wink, nudge, nudge. This is The Fugitive Part Two.
Yeah.
You know, we just saw the scene where the window of this Marshall's convict plane gets shot out. And it's funny because now I've seen the Mythbusters where they busted that myth.
I know.
And they said, you know what? The window would probably blow out. But
you wonder how much Mythbusters is and will creep into the consciousness of certain age old cliches of movies that they're able to go.
Yeah, but it's,
you can put them in movies, but you have to recognize the huge portion of your audience. The minute you do that, it's going to go, oh God.
Yeah. I think that might be a slow, small thing because there, you know, someone's going to happen. The producers just say, oh, it's more cinematic. Let's do it anyway.
No, I understand. I'm saying, but there comes a point, you know, it's the same way, you know, the way people would get shot in the movies and other things. And they changed a lot of that. And ironically, a lot of the way they do those are not, you know, the way they changed them was to a less real thing.
Probably on the edges.
As Mythbusters proved.
Probably on the edges. You know, when you've got a little more control over your movie, you start taking that sort of thing into consideration more and more. Anyway, so horrible movie. Deja Vu stinked. So you have seen The D, Tenacious D.
Yeah, I saw Tenacious D. And it's important to note that myself and you and several of our friends were very into The D very early on. And I remember distinctly the first day I saw Tenacious D on HBO on their old TV series that they had. It was like this little 15-minute TV series. And it was like, I think in 1998. Yeah, yeah. And they had their first one, The History of Tenacious D. And I remember watching that laughing so hard, thinking it's the funniest thing ever. I immediately taped it. I remember going into school to go show like my professor Goldberg this thing and some others going, dude, it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. It was so goddamn funny. And then when everything was said and it was funny and I got into it and I remember they had their album came out and I loved that, or I didn't like it initially and then I loved it and then everything else. Well, so watching this movie, so all that is precursor to watching this movie. I liked it a lot. I thought it was funny, but so much about my enjoyment of the movie was tempered by 6 years of Jack Black. And knowing the way he acts and the way he is and his, I don't want to call it shtick, but the way he interacts, it's not fresh that much. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning of this movie, Jack Black is incredibly earnest. He's like, as a joke, he's overplaying this earnest Jack Black character that worships Kyle Gass because Kyle Gass is a real rock and roller. Well, it's funny. But, you know, it would have been funnier 5 years ago had I not experienced Jack Black anymore. So it's kind of like tempered. And a lot of the movie was like that, where it was funny, but it was sort of tempered by previous experiences with him. So I loved it. I was surprised that it was, to some extent, it's a musical. I was surprised it's not more of a musical. And to some extent, I was surprised there wasn't more of the classic Tenacious D songs. There was new songs. but they weren't like as funny as the old songs because
I was gonna say, cause there's a new soundtrack album as well. Yep. And have you listened to it?
I have not, I've only seen the movie, but a lot of the songs in the original Tenacious D, the songs completely held up on their own, telling a story mm-hmm. that was matched into them. Like Kyle Took a Bullet for Me, or Kyle quit the band or whatever.
City Hall.
And City Hall, this one here, they're really totally in context and they're not as good. That said, there was a lot of great stuff. Dave Grohl came back as Satan, you know, and he was really good. And there was like a lot of good stuff. There was a lot of famous faces you would recognize in there. Ben Stiller, obviously,
I'll make an effort to try and see it this
week. It's one of those things. I know we just said about seeing a movie stoned, but it's one of those movies that you could imagine if you were stoned getting into it. And I can imagine watching it and liking it even more later. I would give it a thumbs up, but I can imagine. I'm definitely get the soundtrack or the movie, and
well, I just
can imagine watching it later.
What's most interesting to me is thinking, you know, I'm a big you got me into Tenacious D, and how is it that I didn't see it the first weekend? You know, how is it that I have not seen it?
I barely saw it the first weekend too, just because I was sort of, you know, if they came to concert, I'd see them again. That was the greatest concert I ever went to some respects.
And so I think, you know, the business was, it did not do that well.
No.
The movie is not doing that
Didn't
well.
Even make the top 10.
Oh, I thought it did.
Nope. Ooh. It came in number 11. But they clearly are pitching it as a long lead movie. You notice they're on Saturday Night Live last night.
I didn't tape that. I meant to.
I slept right through. And they're on The Daily Show last week.
Well, I
want
to talk about that.
Okay, I missed that one.
But before I bring up The Daily Show appearance, my feeling is it's bad timing. It came out on a weekend. There were two movies I wanted to see more.
Yeah.
And yet they're, you know, I know that usually when you're scheduling movies as a studio, you're looking at other genre films. What other comedies are out, and really just Borat in terms of that's been out a month or whatever. So I'm sure they thought comedy wise, this is probably it. Well, I'd Deck the Halls, but that's a different crowd.
Yeah.
And so
Borat is the definite crowd.
That's probably what they were thinking of. There are no other comedies that we're fighting with. And yet that's not how I look at it. I look at it as what other just movies do I want to see?
Yeah.
I wanted to see The Fountain more. I wanted to see Deja Vu more, even though clearly I shouldn't have.
Well, I feel bad for them because they probably thought, well, Borat will be out, so I can not worry about that. And Borat did four times the business 4 weeks in than Tenacious D.
You know, I kind of wish they had done a different release strategy. Release it in January, release it in February when there's nothing else out. You know, because a film like this, it doesn't matter really if you dump it in the January, February graveyard.
Well, it shows the wisdom of the bean counters, at least in terms of what it is, because they greenlit the movie. It was like a dream project. Jack Black is making $20 million a movie, or $12 million a movie right now. And this movie, him and Kyle shared $1 million.
Did they?
Yeah, and they got, or they got $1 million apiece or whatever, but the movie was made for $20 million. And even though who knows how much it's going to make?
It might make 15,
but with the DVD and everything, the thing's definitely going to make a profit. So it shows the wisdom of doing it that way because hearing about that Bruce Almighty movie and how it's
Evan Almighty,
how it's up in the $150-$200 million range, you're thinking, boy, how could anybody take a crap shot. I know, it's ridiculous.
I like how this plane was flooding a minute ago, and now it's only a foot deep in water.
Just above water.
Please continue.
So anyway, it's just amazing how, I honestly have a lot of respect for these bean counters, because you'll hear about filmmakers railing against them killing my movie because they wanted to cut the budget and them doing this and that. And I'm going, you know, ultimately, they got to make a profit, and they may greenlit your movie, but they're not going to be around to greenlit your next movie if you spend $180 million on a friggin' comedy.
So both Tenacious D was on The Daily Show.
Yep.
I don't know, Wednesday or Thursday's episode.
Yeah.
And, you know, they come out, and Jack Black very succinctly says it was a flop.
Yeah.
He says it's not, it's...
Oops, sorry.
No problem.
Still
you know, it didn't do as well as we want. We're hoping for cult status.
Yeah.
And I thought, I have never seen... I can't remember... someone plugging a movie, doing it after it's already opened.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's a definite strategy, or if it was just they couldn't get booked in time, which is kind of hard to believe.
I don't know. That is weird, because I know...
You're right. The same thing with SNL.
What's weird is I don't remember them promoting it much the week of. They were on Howard Stern like 2 weeks before, and I saw them on other appearances 2 weeks before, and now they're being promoted a week after.
Well, because now you... It's got to be the worst nightmare, and I imagine they're better able to handle it because it's a comedy and they're kind of whatever. But to go out and say, our movie has clearly flopped, and we're sorry, we thought we did a good thing, and it's got to be extremely uncomfortable for a star to come out and do that.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, it's got to be a little easier for Jack Black, but
yeah,
I thought that was a really interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
So, and now I feel like, you know, because I'm a Tenacious D fan, I really need to make an effort to see it and help it out by my $7 worth.
I know. I was worried we were going in there, and that was, I mean, it was lit. We're talking the Thanksgiving. Actually, I didn't see it opening day because I saw it on Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
the day
that's
after
right. It opened Wednesday.
So I saw it on Friday, and
that's part of the problem. I had to go to my family in Southern Oregon, and there's no chance of seeing a movie when you're
so
down
I went
there.
With our buddy Mark, and we're driving around, and I've never seen the mall as crowded as it was that day.
Which day?
Friday. Black Friday, and we're going in there, and we're going, dude. And we're literally 3 minutes before the movie starts. I go, we are not going to get into this movie. I'm very fatalistic because I like to get there early and get a seat that I like.
Oh, me too.
So, and he just likes to show up and go, oh, we're just missing the 20, you know, the 20 minutes of previous. I go, first of all, I don't care if I'm missing that. I want to sit where I want to sit. I don't want to. But anyway, so fortunately, they put it in one of the big theaters. Well, not one of the huge theaters, but they have like one of the bigger theaters.
Uh-huh.
And B, it was like half full. So we had no problem, even though we had to park all the way up on the top deck of the parking garage and everything. But so clearly all the other movies were very popular.
I wouldn't have gone out on Friday.
Looking for something to do. I can't remember what was going on.
Well,
that Friday.
And you know, something I meant to talk about in our pre-Thanksgiving show was some of these TV deals, like Walmart having a 42-inch Vizio plasma for $999 or whatever.
Yep.
And our friend
Costco did too.
And Mark was talking to me. He said he was thinking about it prior to that. And he said, you know, do I compromise my values or do I get this great deal?
What are his values? Oh, to go to Walmart?
To not go to Walmart.
Oh, well, first off, knowing Mark, no, he's never going to buy anything like that. Second of all, if he didn't want to compromise his values, he could have gone to Costco and got a $999 42-inch plasma screen TV.
Again, some of the people, some of my friends in a chat room the previous week were... pointing out, you know, look at this Samsung DLP deal Circuit City is going to have. And I'm like, ooh, don't show me any HD TV deals after I just bought one for full price.
Yeah.
Oh, that. Ooh.
Did you see Saturday Night Live at all last night? Because they had a Walmart spoof that was pretty clever. It was an ad and they were showing people at Walmart. They call it like Sales Mart or something. And they're saying, how do I get this rotisserie grill for $29.99? What a great deal. And then they go throughout the store showing two smiling workers going, we don't have any healthcare insurance. And then they show this person in China going, I'm making, you know, 12. And they had accurate numbers. They didn't do them. I'm making the equivalent of $12 a day. So you can do this. And then they go through the whole.
It was
really clever. I'm thinking, damn, I keep forgetting. Saturday Night Live does have flashes of brilliance in it.
Well, God, they just released the stats in last week that Walmart is the largest employer in Washington state with the most employees
subsidizing
Medicare.
No, it's the state subsidized state's paying $9 million for Medicare. And that's common across the country.
Yeah. Thanks Walmart.
And it's one of those things that a couple of the states have decided they try to put these rules in place that if an employer, and they have all these rules that effectively apply to one company and Walmart's been successful fighting them. But you know, it's funny. I talked to a lot of people that are not hugely liberal, conservative, whatever, but they get mad at that because they realize that Walmart is having cheap prices on our backs. So
then why isn't Walmart pushing for universal health care?
Walmart's in a lot of the irony. They are. That's what a lot of people behind the scenes are. There was this huge New York article.
I haven't heard that.
Well, there was this big New York.
If it happens, it has to be because business is pushing
exactly.
It towards the politicians.
Why are we going to, why is so many things going to be affected positively to combat global warming? not because of us lefty liberals and our Priuses and stuff like that. It's because insurance companies are doing it. Did you hear that a couple of the major insurance carriers...
Richard drives a BMW.
A BMW gets 30 miles the gallon.
I'm just kidding.
But why do... What did you hear what happened in New Orleans? That a couple of major insurance carriers said, absolutely, we're no longer going to provide insurance there.
Well, they did it because they are unsatisfied with the levy status.
Exactly. So what's going to happen? What about all these people on the coast that are going, I can't buy my dream home on the coast, or I bought this land, but I can't build a house because I can't buy insurance for it. Well, that's the market forces going to change the way we operate.
And that is... Yes, and I am completely in favor of that.
I am too.
If you're stupid enough to build your house under a mountain that could slide down on it,
exactly,
then you should not be insured for it.
But it's market forces, and that's what's happening with Walmart. And they have this article in the New Yorker pointing out that ultimately, the thing that's going to cause some kind of single payer, government controlled healthcare is places like Walmart going, dang. We have become fanatical about controlling every cost we have. We are incredibly good. What's the one cost we have no control over? It's this healthcare stuff. And we know that people want us to get it. And eventually it's businesses like them. They're going to go, it's going to be cheaper for us, cheaper for people. And all those conservatives that hate it, then they're going to be really in trouble because suddenly Walmart is on the other side of them. But it's definitely going to happen. And it will definitely because of business. So
we just missed the one good line in the movie about
what was that. What did he say?
When Tommy Lee Jones tells Robert Downey Jr. to basically get a real gun, get a Glock.
Yeah.
It was something along those lines that within the context was very funny. It was the one good line in this entire movie was making fun of the gun.
I don't really remember the one good line. I remember watching this. This reminds me.
We're talking about U.S. Marshals.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. And this movie reminded me a lot of Men in Black, too. That it just was a Tommy Lee Jones. In a sequel that he shouldn't have done because it was just a by rote by the numbers. Although the difference is here, it seems like they were trying to make it a good movie in U.S. Marshals. Men in Black was just terrible in every
account. Well, they throw enough money at you, you're like, you know what? Fine.
Yeah,
you're going to give me that much money. I don't care how good it is. Most people have that price. We're all whores. It's just a matter of the dollar figure.
Yeah. I do remember this was one of the first movies that Robert Downey Jr. was in. Post him, waking up stoned in somebody's thing. And I remember it was a kind of comeback movie. And I love Robert Downey Jr. I remember watching this the whole time thinking, God, the poor guy, I wonder what they had to pay the insurance companies to guarantee that. Cause whenever you go on this movies, you have to get these guarantee companies that guarantee you're not going to do something stupid.
Yep.
And for Robert Downey, they must have to pay a fortune, but, clearly they have this, set piece of this downed airline, and clearly they're trying to get the money's worth for this stupid set piece.
You're right. I didn't think of it like that, but you're right.
So anyway,
one last thing about Walmart, then we'll move on. A couple years ago, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 years ago, I'm working overnights at the radio station. Mm-hmm. I worked the Thanksgiving night, Thursday night, overnight. I'm off at 6 a.m.
Yep.
I'm driving home, and I lived off an apartment off 164th, which is where I think for a while that was the only Walmart in the area. It was also off 164th.
It's basically still the only Walmart in the area. They're more rural.
And you're working overnight, and I'm exhausted. I need to sleep. And all of a sudden, I'm getting close to my exit. There's traffic on the freeway. There's never traffic on the freeway at 6 a.m. going northbound on 5. So, and basically the exit is backed up onto the freeway. And I'm like, is there an accident? What the? And you're just so frustrated because that's when traffic is the most frustrating, is the middle of the night when you're not expecting it.
Yep.
You're just, oh, I need to get home. What is this? And 10 minutes later, I realize it's people going to Walmart for the early post-Thanksgiving deals.
Yep.
I was livid. Oh, and for some reason, that didn't dawn on me that could possibly be the reason. So the concept of doing anything that Friday after is just anathema to me.
I've done that once in my life.
And God, even last night, yesterday, going to Deja Vu, Saturday, December 2nd.
Yep.
I saw it at the mall theater. I almost didn't get there in time because getting into park was such a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
And the mall, or the theater is off sort of the food court corner of the mall. So it's not like you're right next to JCPenney's or whatever. But God, it's just it's to the point now you don't want to do anything near the mall until Christmas is over. You just, even if it's a movie. Anyway, moving on. Let's move on. I saw a commercial flipping around yesterday for this movie with Noah Wiley, The Librarian.
The Librarian.
And it's very much a archaeological Indiana Jones ripoff. And that's fine, but, you know, that's fine for what it is. But then you see this commercial and Noah Wiley saying to the chick in the movie, hold on, you'd be surprised what you could learn in the library. I wrote it down right after I saw it because I know I wanted to mention it. How honestly, how do you write that?
You write, and how does that? How do you decide that?
Even as
big
a ha ha, tongue in cheek, we're making fun of ourselves joke. It's still bad. How do you write
that? And to use that as your tagline for the movie and the ad. That's
Isn't Noah Wiley like a good actor? He was on ER forever. Can't he get something better than the TNT movie of the week?
Wasn't he in Donnie Darko? I think he wasn't he the one of the teachers in Donnie Darko? Yeah, he was in Donnie Darko. And other than that, I can think of a thing he's been in.
He was Steve Jobs in Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Right, that's right. That was actually not bad.
Anyway, come on, Noah. Hold out. All right, let's what else do I have? Zune. Yeah. So prior to going to the movie, this other mistake I made, I went by Best Buy to get a DVD. And so I thought, okay, I have an extra minute or two. It's not as crowded in here as I thought it would be. I'm going to go see what the Zune is looking like. And I was expecting an end cap full of these things because I had heard that they were flooding the market with Zunes. And you couldn't go anywhere without being Zune in your face.
Yeah.
And I couldn't. I'm like, well, I'm not seeing anything. What's going on? Where's the Zune? And I finally find it in and amongst the other MP3 players.
Yep.
And it just looks like, you know, anything else. And I look at it for about...
That's what it is.
I look at it for about 20 seconds and I think, okay. They had it locked down so it was horizontal, but the screen orientation was vertical.
Well,
so if I didn't know any better, I'd be irritated by that.
Yep.
But there was no indication whatsoever. There was no other signage, no other banners, no other end cap. Honest to God, the Clerks 2 DVD display was bigger than the Zune.
I think the way they put this thing out is just painful. I read this article about
a cover of Business Week.
Well, I read this article a couple of weeks ago about their efforts to one of the things they were doing in this relentless effort to buy hipness. They went out and they went and threw money after a bunch of really hip bands and they sponsored these little concerts by them and they were Zune this and Zune that and the bands were openly willing to take the money and openly disdainful of Zune and their effort to use their hipness form, which I thought was funny that they did that. But they did something where they secretly Microsoft secretly decided to seed a bunch of Zune boxes. So you're buying a black or a brown Zune because those are the options or whatever.
White
and
brown,
white and,
black.
And they put 100 across the country pink Zunes because, oh my God, if you open up, got a pink Zune, unbelievable how special that would be. No, nobody wants a pink friggin' Zune. So now, they're saying it's a major, it's like a prize that you get if you get this pink Zune. And one of the blog comments I thought was funny. Oh, that's great. It's a major prize. First prize is one pink Zune. Second prize is two pink Zunes, meaning who wants a freaking pink Zune? You bought a brown one. I mean, it's unbelievable. I think they thought this would be the coolest thing ever, but they picked pink. I don't know what they were thinking. So anyway, how they're doing it. But they were, it was interesting how very early on they were trumpeting, or they were downplaying it. Bill Gates especially was downplaying it, was heavily praising the iPod and downplaying the Zune because he realized what was coming down the pike. And then they but they also have quietly been pushing that, oh, it's immediately, it's the number two media player already in the world, number one has 70% of the market share, and number two has 6%.
Yeah, it's a bit of a drop off.
Yeah, so I just thought that was kind of funny, but anyway, the one thing that I was surprised nobody else did this, because Andy Ignado from the Chicago Sun-Times, who's a famous old Mac World columnist from years back, he did a review and he so thoroughly trashed it, and I was surprised how much traction that got. I read about that article everywhere.
I linked to that in my chat room at work, and one of my friends works at Microsoft, has a Zune, and likes it.
Yep.
He really he did not like that article at all, pointing out that a number of the things that he's discussing would be fixed. I want to get my semantics right so that I'm presenting his argument correctly. But now I'm spacing.
Wait, you mean they're broken, well, but like they're going to fix it later?
Well, no, his point, I think his final send-off comment was that it's going to be gone in 6 months.
Oh,
the guy in the article.
Oh, Andy would.
Yeah, Andy's well, he said the Zune will be done in 6 months. Yeah. And my friend is saying, are you retarded? Microsoft at least is going to throw money at this thing for a while.
Well, okay, yeah.
And I have to agree with that.
They may do that, but that's kind of... But you recognize that's kind of a weak argument. Are you retarded? Microsoft is fully committed to throwing away even more money. That's what you're arguing.
Well, no, it's Microsoft will invest the money to hone it until it gets it right. And everybody recognizes that's what Microsoft does. Nothing is good till version 3.0.
Which is a horrible thing. How many Apple products, how many are like that?
Hey, you know,
like
it's...
I mean, the one thing about this article that was a little disingenuous is people that were reading this were not recognizing it. Sort of like David Pogue. Andy Ignado is a major Mac person. He's a Mac columnist. He was a columnist for Mac World for like 10 years. He definitely has at least a bias against Microsoft that is visible, and that was not, and all the people linking this just thought, oh, it's just some random guy. It's sort of, and David Pogue at least is a little fairer, but I just thought, I don't disagree with anything he said. I just thought he should have, in terms of honesty, let people know about that.
Yeah. That being said, I thought it was a really funny article.
I did too.
All right. So was there something else about the Zune?
No, I just thought that pink thing. I thought that was damn funny. They seeded it with pink. And I know, you know, I don't know if you remember this, but when ATMs first came out, like in the mid-80s, and they put a bunch of them, I can't remember what bank it was, but they put a bunch in grocery stores, in other words, and they were trying to convince people to use them. Can you imagine trying to convince somebody to use an ATM? And you know what they did? In the $20 bill tracks, they put, oh, sorry. Oh, no, I'm facing the right way.
You were...
Oh, sorry. In the $20 bill tracks, they seeded it and put $100 bills in some of these things. So you would think you're getting a 20 and get a 100. Well, that's a great thing. That convinces me to want to use this. Knowing there might be a pink one when I order a black one, that just convinces me. If it's like, I hope I was smart enough to open the thing in the car rather than when I got home. Because if I got home and found I had a pink one, unless somebody convinced me that, wow, I could sell the dang thing on eBay for them. And I think that's maybe what they're going for. But I don't want to sell something on eBay. I want a black one if that's what I ordered. If I got an iPod and I ordered a white one or a black one and I ended up with a pink one, I'd be ticked off.
To me, the biggest omission is the lack of podcast support.
What is up with that? Well, among many other things.
And Major Nelson brought it up in his podcast with one of the product managers, you know, because he's saying, oh, how come I can't get my Major Nelson podcast or, you know, broadcast, whatever. And again, you can drag the MP3 file over, so it's not like you can't listen to them, but there's no RSS feed support.
No, it's insanity. And also...
Who cares if that's an update later? How is that not now available?
Okay, and then there's stupid sharing feature that they created yourself. When you share it, it adds DRM to your thing.
So even if you create your own MP3 file, no matter what it is, you own it, you have the rights to it, you share it with a friend, it gives you the 3-play within 3-day thing, regardless of your legal ownership.
Yeah.
You created it.
Yep.
It assumes that anything you have on there is not has to be... DRM'd. That was a horrible.
Well,
and it's, you know, and
it's kind of funny.
Everybody points out Apple falls on the side of the consumer. Microsoft falls on the side of the content, provider. You know, the music label, yeah. the movie studio. All right, so we're running a little running towards the end here. You have you had any previous experience with the Xbox Live movie/TV?
Oh,
because you had emailed me that on the first day you tried to get a movie and apparently, like, their servers totally choked.
I've done it several times at this point, just because I wanted to experience it and see what it just get the full feel. First day, and it was funny. I was looking at the blogs. Clearly, I was looking at the wrong blogs because I wasn't seeing any mention of it. But yeah, I ordered. First off, I went to order a movie, I just ordered a TV show.
And
CSI.
This is through Xbox Live's new Get TV /
which, by
movies.
The way, they didn't promote at all. People knew it was coming down, but it was not some big promotion, which was probably smart.
Mm-hmm.
And the damn thing was, first of all, I couldn't tell if I ordered or not because even the pages wouldn't come up. Then when I ordered, it would tell me I ordered it. Then it said I downloaded it, but I hadn't. Then it wasn't clear if I downloaded again, whether I was paying for it. Then when I finally did download it, it took 18 hours to download that CSI show.
Did you get an HD or an SD?
I got HD.
Okay.
And it gives you the option if you buy HD to get SD. 18 hours. Okay. So later I ordered V for Vendetta just to see what that was like HD. Cause I thought, well, I'll get an HD or whatever. And, again, took better part of a day to download. It was ridiculous. And again, it's that whole thing. I had to go put like $20 in my account and then peel off it. And I still can't figure out how much I'm paying for these things. It's all bad on every level. It's not intuitive. You can't figure out what you have, what you've charged for it and stuff. Then I go to the website they suggest to see my account. And then I realize, oh, that's right. I signed up for some account, to also have like an updated Hotmail account so I could, you know, have more stuff. And I realized, God, I don't want to pay $20 for a year for that. I realized I'd paid $20 last year for this, automatically charged me. So I went to delete that thing, and literally it's impossible to delete. I have to like phone them in. Yeah. I've never been to a website where I can't just cancel something like that. Just awful. But anyway, terrible experience. And my comparison was when Apple sets up, they come up with some new deal. Now you can order TV shows. Now you can order movies. Now you can do this. When you do it, they announce it. Steve Jobs announces it. And that second it goes live and it never fails. You can download them at the same speed the first day as you do 30 days in. And with Xbox or with Microsoft, it was a series of excuses. We didn't anticipate how popular it'd be. Guess what, morons? Apple knows how to anticipate. If you want to compete with them, you would never be making that excuse ever. Starbucks product placement on U.S. Marshals here. You would never, ever fail on that stuff. How could you not anticipate this? You're claiming that you're... It was maddening.
To me, there is, you know, they look at their gameplay numbers. They look at their various Xbox Live. You know, how many people downloaded.
Are you about to make an excuse for them?
A little bit.
Just build in some redundancy.
Hold on. Let me finish. You know, they're looking at how many people downloaded the Battlestar Galactica recap episode. How many people are downloading movie trailers? And they're looking at this and they're saying, okay, we have some idea. We're doing market research. We have some idea what the traffic's going to be. So I can understand that they're going in with a certain expectation and that may have been exceeded. Now, having said that, you would think that Microsoft is one of the like four companies that has the server space. Microsoft, Google, Yahoo. You know, these are all companies that, you know, they're building new facilities in friggin' the Dalles.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's right next to a dam. It can get cheap hydropower. The only reason they're building them there is because it's a half a cent cheaper to run server farms for the electricity. And yes, you would think that Microsoft can handle server capacity. It is hard to believe that they wouldn't have had a plan B in place. So on one hand, I'm saying I can understand that they had a certain expectation that their market research led them to that clearly was low. On the other hand, you're right. How could they not have had...
I just look at this and go, Apple has never had to make excuses, ever. In rare situations.
The other problem I would have had with this is the timing. Why would you make this live the Tuesday before Thanksgiving? When if there's a problem, all your support people
want
to be at home.
That's a good point.
Because you know that as soon as this stuff started being problematic, a bunch of people were called in and lived in their offices through Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
That is not cool.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. That was. And you could read the pain in Major Nelson's old, his... when he did his posting about you could read that, oh, this is a major catastrophe and we're trying to solve it. But it hasn't, but unless I can see, and the other thing that's that iPod is way better is I downloaded CSI and you know what? I can start watching it while it's downloading.
Oh, you can't. I thought you could do, I thought this was a progressive download that you could watch.
No, it's not at all. And even if it were,
I thought it was.
Even if it were, the fact that it takes 18 hours to download a 2-hour movie, you'd have to watch it in snippets.
I'd assume it's faster now.
I don't know, because I ordered the V for Vendetta like 3 days ago, and it was as bad as before.
Really?
So there were certain things that worked better and faster, but definitely not the download. But still, I mean, they need to make it better. They simply do. They've got a perfect setup, they've kind of ruined it.
You know, in listening to Twit last week, you know, they got into the HD DVD Blu-ray argument.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, that versus downloads. And one, God, I can't remember who had which side. I think Dvorak is saying that people understand discs and like to collect discs. And someone else was saying, you know what? By the time the format war is over, everyone's going to be on digital download and it won't matter. And so, you know, we have talked about this over and over.
I can understand that, but they got to deal with the speed issue because one thing I don't want to do is wait.
That's why I wanted to ask you about your experience, because this is HD movies and this potentially, you know, sidesteps the HD DVD Blu-ray issue by making it easy to
download. Well, as we talked before,
saying it's not easy.
If they could figure out the extras, that would be fine. And I imagine they'll solve this. It's the speed issue. When I've decided I want to watch a movie, I want to watch it. And basically, I've been spoiled by video on demand, you know, because I have cable. I go and go, oh, I want to watch CSI. And now video,
it's very, and you're exactly right. Doing that is tricky. I have a friend who worked, who has some knowledge of the back end of what it takes to do video on demand.
Yeah.
And it's very tricky anticipating the bandwidth.
But they do it.
You're right. They do. And he also actually worked at Enron in their broadband division.
Yeah.
And they had this huge, you know, they're part of their huge effort. Like, we're going to do broadband to everybody. And it's, you know, we can do movies and we can do this and we can do all these services and charge all this great money and make all this money from providing this to services. And he would get in trouble because he was saying, there's no way to get it from the last mile, basically, to get it from the poles to the houses, because that's where your bottleneck is. And they refuse to believe him.
Have you seen that movie yet?
He ran Ron, and thank God he did, that he didn't get sucked into any of that.
Have you seen the movie yet? The smartest guys in the room?
I borrowed yours.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know if you'd seen it, because it's great.
But it's interesting.
I bought the book, too, the other day.
You know, I can understand the technological reason. You can understand it. And we're not network engineers like he was.
Yep.
And he's saying, look, you can't do it like this, and here's why. And that's a fundamental problem with this entire division's business plan. It's not going to work because it doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
And to some degree, what you're talking about, the speed, part of that has to do with their service speed, but part of it also has to do with everybody's connection to the net. Is it DSL? Is it cable?
I know.
And until
it's weird, it's weird when they talk about South Korea and their average speed is 50 megabits.
We are so far behind a lot of the rest of the world.
I'm at 6 megabits, and that is the very fastest you can generally get in the States, and they're literally 4 to 10 times faster than that.
So it's, you know, it's something we're going to continue to talk about, is digital downloads for HD. Will it catch on fast enough to render HD DVD / Blu-ray moot?
Yeah.
You know, my friend John, and we're about done here. My friend John yesterday was saying, I'm waiting till there's a winner in the format war. I'm flat out waiting. And it made me think, well, what if there is no winner? What if it's all digital?
To me, as it turns out, it doesn't really matter. I'll probably get the Microsoft HD DVD player and just go with that just so I can do them. But to me, I'm moving kind of on. I've got this big collection, but I sort of see it and go, you know, I've got my old CD collection back there. I won't get rid of them, but I'm not I don't know. It just doesn't matter to me much
another
anymore.
Another aspect is I like to own it. I don't want to rent the HD film.
I agree.
I want to own
it. For no other reason, that's why I like the Microsoft. I take that back. That's what makes me mad. I own that episode of CSI. I can download it, rewatch it whenever. That's what the rights it gave me.
Right.
That V for Vendetta, I rented that for 2 weeks.
Right.
And it was like, wait a second. You know, I didn't know. But then again, it was cheap. So maybe they had a different option
because
only $4.
I think they're going to have a movie ownership option. Yeah. But until they get this extras with it,
yeah,
I'm not interested.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Because that's why I remember being struck by, this movie's pretty cheap. It was like $4. But it was unlike the Apple one, you keep it
forever.
Well,
and the other issue with that is now you're going to have a bunch of different standards of iTunes movie, Xbox Live movie. You know, how are we storing it? Xbox Live is storing it on their servers. If you don't have the room on your smaller hard drive, iTunes is saying you need a hard drive big enough.
Yeah.
Do you need to then worry about $1,000 NAS network attached solution, network attached storage device? And suddenly there's a lot more options than just here's my rack of DVDs.
Yeah.
And that'll be confusing for the consumer. And I think that'll have to simplify itself.
Yep.
All right. I think we have reached the point where you need leave.
I do.
You guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com is the email address that you can reach us through, questions, comments, or concerns. And we will be back next week. And
same bat time, same bat channel.
Wow. I'm not going to endorse that as a sign off.
Sorry, it just came out.
You can just say join us next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Matt.
I'm Richard.
And we're done.